Thank you, Gary. Great song pick. So before we get started, I just wanted to, I had a text message from our brother Enrique, and he is saying that Debbie is not doing well. He didn't give any details, but Debbie and there's other folks that are traveling to the feast. It's like we want to be all well, so put them in your prayer. And that's good. I guess they're in Hawaii this year. Aloha, Enrique. Puerto Vallarta. That's Hawaii West. Guys. Well, we have a PowerPoint today. This is going to be fun. We got a good crowd. Do I got to do anything, Mike? There we go. Gary picked out a really good last song. He must know what we're talking about today, because we're talking about that time when Jesus Christ is going to come and that Mount of Olives is going to split in two, and all those nations are going to come and they're going to fight and they're going to lose. So what we know, let me make sure I know how to use this forward. All right. No place on earth has been as contentious as the land of Israel, and no city on earth has been as contentious as Israel's capital, Jerusalem. And no part of Jerusalem has been as contentious as the Temple Mount. It is a long center of conflict and controversy. Why would the Temple Mount, a large hilltop area reshaped into a 36-acre stone platform that dominates Jerusalem's landscape, why would it be a source of conflict? It depends on whom you ask. For Christians, the Temple Mount is a vivid reminder of Jesus Christ's ministry, and many incidents recorded in the Gospels took place on this enormous temple complex. And this temple complex, it was constructed by the Roman leader Herod the Great and his successors. Now, for Muslims, the Temple Mount is Al-Harim al-Sharif, which translates into being the noble sanctuary. It is the location to which they claim Islam's founder Muhammad supposedly flew by night from Mecca on Barak, I guess that's his steed, wing steed of the prophets, and from which, accompanied by the angel Gabriel, he ascended to the heavenly throne of Allah. Well, okay. Now, for Jews, the Temple Mount encompasses the holiest spot on earth, the summit of Mount Moriah, where Abraham spared his son, Isaac, from sacrifice, the spot where King Solomon built the beautiful first temple, which was destroyed by the Babylonians. It was the location of the temple rebuilt by Zerubbabel after the Jews returned from their captivity in Babylon. It's the site of the magnificent temple Herod the Great built in the decades before and after year one of the Common Era. And ironically, it was destroyed by Roman legions in 70 AD. And it's the location of a future temple from which the Messiah will reign on earth. Three religions, three competing, overlapping claims. That's the recipes for centuries of conflict. Back in 2005, 20 years ago this feast, my wife Tina and I had two extended tours after the Feast of Tabernacles that year. One was in Egypt, and then it followed by a week in Israel. And it started in Amman, Jordan. And it was highlighted by an exciting visit to the land designated by God as a setting to record his great plan for human salvation. One of the things that is striking is the compact size of Israel. You can easily go from north to south in one day and east to west in just a few hours in most cases. The biblical sites we visited are very close to one another, and from many mountain peaks, you can look in many directions and see many biblical areas. Now, this is from in Jordan, from Mount Nebo, and that is just right above the Dead Sea down there. And it's across the Jordan from Jericho, and Jerusalem's over there. And you can just see so many places. And this just happened to be the place that God took Moses up to and said, you will get to see the land, but you don't get to enter the land. And again, an example of the size of Israel, small, and the proximity to other nations around them. We traveled through the northern region of Upper Galilee. We visited biblical sites of Capernaum and sailed on the Sea of Galilee. But a great highlight was praying at the wall, the Western Wall in Jerusalem. And then we had time to spend touring the Temple Mount. Quite a bit of history and decades of archaeology have really uncovered a number of things up there. At the southern wall of the Temple Mount is now a large archaeological park showing the many periods of civilization that ruled Jerusalem for the last 2,000 years. We had a Bible study with Darris McNeely, and we were reminded that back in 1973, the man given this Bible study, Darris McNeely, was working as a student volunteer on what they'd called the dig, and many of the Ambassador College students at that time were able to go up there. I believe it was near 90 students or so. And a lot of the ministers that are still speaking today were at that site, and I believe it really impacted the way they think about the Bible. So, in fact, in 1960s, after the 1967 Six-Day War, Mr. Armstrong was personally asked to help excavate sites in Jerusalem, where this Temple Mount stands. And in 1967, before 1967, the last time the Jews had any access to that Temple Mount was the first century AD. So, the professor of biblical history and archaeology at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Professor Benjamin Mazur, a pioneering Israeli historian and dean of biblical archaeologists, wanted Ambassador College students to participate in the archaeological excavation. But he didn't know if the church was willing to do it. He knew that Christ was going to return to David's throne, and he thought he could clean off the rubble for him so he would be able to build on it. This led the way for several hundred students to go to Jerusalem, and it was the dig in 1973. It was exciting on this trip that Tina and I took at the feast 20 years ago to be there with Darris and revisit the site and see what other church efforts helped to uncover. In the Second Temple period, there were monumental steps leading up to the temple gates, and you can still walk up those steps. And Mr. McNeely, he always called those his steps because he helped undig those. On my visit to the mount, I was able to visit the Dome of the Rock. I mean, get pretty close to the Dome of the Rock. I did have a Palestinian man take, I think it was $40 to tell me which way our group went. But otherwise, there was no problem. There was this thing up there, the telltale step. Now, this goes along with trying to figure out the archaeology of the original Temple Mount. It's unique. It's consisted of pre-Herodian building blocks. So it's pre-Roman. And as you can see in this picture, it's not necessarily parallel with the other steps. There's a little jog right there. And what's interesting about this line of this step it is perfectly parallel with the Eastern Wall. And based upon this step and that measurement, archaeologists are able to find the original 500 royal cubit temple mount that existed in Solomon's time. And that line and that stone is original to that 3,000 year ago temple that mount that was built. There's a book I have called The Secrets of the Temple Mount, and it's written by Lean and Kathleen Rittmeyer, and it's published by the Biblical Archaeology Society. And the book uses much of Professor Mazur's Temple Mount discoveries, kind of an interesting linkage with our students years ago. And Rittmeyer worked between 1973 and 1978 as the surveyor and field architect of the archaeological expedition of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. This is a man who has entirely committed his career to understanding the Temple Mount, measuring it, figuring out what's old, what's new. And he points out places that, for instance, once had large arches. And they had gates up there. Now, this particular picture is kind of interesting. It's called the Golden Gate, and it's on the Eastern Wall. This is a view taken from the Mount of Olives on the right-hand side, right, lower picture. The upper picture on the left side, that is from a model that was in Jerusalem of the original Temple Mount. Now, the Golden Gate is special because that is where the priests entered the Temple Mount to go into services and perform their duties as priests. In the years afterwards, the Muslims completely sealed it. They put graves on the exterior of the wall. And, you know, a gate in the Bible is not necessarily just an opening of a door back and forth. I kind of liken it to City Hall. It's like where business is taken care of and or going through customs, for instance. So it had more importance. And that gate now is a Muslim worship area. We'll call it that, okay? Where are we? Next. You know, it's interesting that at the Western Wall, where Jewish people and Christians pray, there are seven courses of stone. And can we see that? So on the little lines I drew in there, you can see the seven courses. And what's interesting above it is that you have the Byzantine, and you have the Muslims building on top of it. The top level of the Temple Mount now, there's 50 feet of rubble up there from destruction and just years of things wearing out and then dirt building up. The Temple Mount we see today has many hollow areas underneath it. The Romans, they would build a support structure of arches and columns to help support and cantilever the weight, and they would fill in other areas. So talking about the 1967 war, Israeli soldiers stormed the gates of the ancient city of Jerusalem, and standing before the massive wall of the Temple Mount, they claimed a birthright given to them years before. They not only had control over the Temple Mount, they also had the potential of inflaming Muslim hatred throughout the world. So they allowed the Jordanians to continue to control the Temple Mount. Although Jews and Christians are allowed on the Temple Mount, there is no outward praying up there at all, and you kind of have to be careful. But archaeological excavation soon began on the southern and the western and areas of the mount, and over the next few decades, they have revealed the city's rich history, including its uncontrovertible Jewish presence and character in the city. You know, the Arab Muslims, they claim the same area, and it's adorned with sacred Islamic sites. They consider it a birthright given to them by God, and both peoples assert rights of ownership. The biblical prophet Ezekiel wrote, "Thus says the Lord God, this is Jerusalem. I have set her in the midst of the nations and the countries around her." The ancient city of Jerusalem possesses little in the way of economic or military use. Still, it's been such a focal point in history that at times it's been called the center of the world. It's considered holy by three major religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and certainly been the epicenter for centuries of religious strife and bloodshed. Even in our global society, what happens in the Middle East seems to be far off in distance, but it relates to our daily lives. And in fact, it's what happens in Jerusalem. It's what makes a big difference in our life. Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, they all trace their roots back to one central figure, a patriarch by the name of Abraham, who wandered in the Middle East after receiving a call from God to leave his homeland. On Mount Moriah, what was later to be Jerusalem's Temple Mount, Abraham faced his greatest test, being willing to offer his son Isaac to God. In Genesis 22, we can turn there. Genesis 22, 1. I don't know, maybe not. You got lights off. I'll go ahead and read it. Genesis 22, 1. Tell the story, Howard. "Now it came to pass after all these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took his two young men with him and Isaac his son, and split the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to the young man, Stay here with the donkey and the lad, and I will go yonder and worship and come back to you. And moving forward, verse 6, So Abraham took the wood and laid it on his son Isaac, and he took the fire in his hand and the knife, and the two of them went together. And Isaac spoke to his father, said, Father. And Abraham said, Here I am, son. And he said, Look, the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went up together. Then they came to the place which God had given them. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood on the altar. And he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched his hand out and took his knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called him, saying, Abraham, Abraham. He said, Here I am. He said, Do not lay a hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in the thicket of thorns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of this place, The Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. So soon after Abraham in the 19th century, Egyptian maps referred to the city as Jerusalem, but later called by its inhabitants Jebus. Shortly before 1000 BC, King David conquered the Jebusite stronghold and renamed it the City of David. That is in 2 Samuel chapter 5. It came to be known as Jerusalem, Zion, as well as the City of David. In 2 Chronicles 4:9, I'll read this for us. another story. And David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, which is Jebus, where the Jebusites were, the inhabitants of the land. But the inhabitants of Jebus said to David, "You shall not come here." Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. Now David said, "Whoever attacks the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain." And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went up first and became chief. Then David dwelt in the stronghold, therefore they called it the city of David. And he built the city around it, from the Milo to the surrounding area. Joab repaired the rest of the city. So David went on and became great, and the Lord of hosts was in him. So David desired to build a temple to God, but he was told he would not be allowed to do so because he had been a man of war, and that his son Solomon would be allowed to build it. God, through an angel and prophet, showed David where to erect the altar for the temple on the threshing floor of Araunah, or also called Ornan the Jebusite, atop Mount Moriah, apparently the same place that God had given the ram to Abraham to sacrifice in place of his son Isaac. We can see the story of David purchasing that place that on the Temple Mount in 2 Samuel 24, verse 16 through 24. 2 Samuel 24, 16 through 24. And when the angel stretched out his hand over Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord relented from the destruction and said to the angel who was destroying the people, "It is enough now, restrain your hand." And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. So Israel had done some things that had not pleased God, and they were going to be punished. And David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking the people and said, "Surely I have sinned and have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let your hand, I pray, be against me and against my father's house." And moving on, verse 20. Now Araunah looked and saw that the king and his servants were coming towards him. So Araunah went out and bowed before the king with his face to the ground. And Araunah said, "Well, why has my lord come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor from you, to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be withdrawn from the people." Now Araunah said to David, "My lord the king, take and offer up whatever seems good to him. Look, here are oxen for burnt offering and threshing implements and yokes for the wood. All of these, O king, Araunah has given the king." And Araunah said to the king, "May the Lord your God accept you." Then the king said to Araunah, "No, but surely I shall buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God, which cost me nothing." That's kind of an interesting symbol about having your offerings taken care of and for free. Verse 25, and David built there an altar to the Lord and offered burnt offerings. Okay, we're on 14. Now Solomon would eventually build a house of the Lord. And you can see in this picture that it's, you know, up on top there. And you can see there's a little altar place up there outside of it. Solomon began to build on the second day of the second month of the fourth year of King of his rule. All right. Now, eventually, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon would conquer and destroy Jerusalem. He did that about 586, 587 BC. He burned the city and destroyed the temple that was built by Solomon. And this began a cycle of destruction and rebuilding that spanned thousands of years. Moving quickly forward in time, we see in 168 BC, you had Antiochus Epiphanes attempts to eliminate the Jewish religion and erect a pagan altar to the temple. And he desecrated the temple. That relates to what Jesus told us in Matthew 24:15. He said, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." And then moving closer to 4 BC, you had rededicated temple, and you had Hanukkah started. I mean, that was 165 to 4 BC. 20 BC, you have Herod the Great. He was the king over Jerusalem and Judea, and he began a massive building project of the temple. Originally, the Jews were quite frightened to have a Roman ruler take control of their holy place, but eventually it wound up to be a great place, although they would tear it down 70 years later. And in 70 AD, Roman legions surrounded Jerusalem and laid siege to it. The Jewish historian Josephus said that more than 1 million people died in the Roman campaign against Jerusalem, although the exact number is disputed. And the Temple Mount itself became a battleground, and the fighting in the temple was burned and completely destroyed. Let me make sure I'm right on my pictures. Okay. So the Romans destroyed every vestige of the temple complex at that time. And that fulfilled the prophecy by Jesus that said not one stone of the temple building would be left upon another. Now the walls, they remained, but the temple itself, it was torn down. A second Jewish war broke out against Roman rule in 132 AD. It was the Bar Kokhba revolt, and it resulted in the Jews being completely removed from the area. And the city under the Roman Emperor Hadrian is rebuilt as the Roman city Aelia Capitolina. And during this time, Hadrian builds a temple to Jupiter on the abandoned Temple Mount. Around 325, Roman Emperor Constantine the Great, who came to support the dominant but compromised form of Christian religion, demolishes the temple to Jupiter on the Temple Mount and builds a Christian church. Archaeological evidence in the form of mosaic flooring and other architectural details show that at some point the Byzantine church was built on the foundation of Jupiter's temple. Yes, that's right, a Christian church on top of a pagan temple. But there's more to the story. This temple to Jupiter and this Byzantine church on the Temple Mount, they had ancient foundations that today houses the Dome of the Rock that you see in the picture. Now, an interesting thing about that picture on your left, the Dome of the Rock, there's that little building that's on the outside of it. If you were to assume that that rock inside of the Dome of the Rock was the original Holy of Holies, then the threshing floor of Arunah and the altar is right there. That's where it would have been placed. In the 600s, shortly after the death of Muhammad, Muslims gained control of Jerusalem and built their holy Islamic sites there. And by then, Christianity had become a major religion in the world, and the Crusades followed into the Middle Ages. About 700 AD, the Muslim conquest of the Holy Land, they recapture Jerusalem, and the Dome of the Rock is built on the Temple Mount. And then 10 years later, you have Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is on the left. It was built there. Now, what's interesting about the Al-Aqsa Mosque, it's built over what's called the Royal Stoa. So the story about Jesus going in and breaking up the money changers and getting rid of all the animals, that was in this area. You know, it was a covered shopping area somewhat. It's built right on top of it, right there. also interesting is there was, I guess, an earthquake back in the early 1920s, and the roof collapsed on Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they had to rebuild it. Well, they had some timber up there, and they did dendrochronology testing on it. Those timbers were 2,000 and 3,000 years old. Now, think about 3,000 years. That's the time of Solomon, of the original temple. So some of that wood was still up there from those times in the temple of Solomon. So after Israel declared independence in 1948, several months of war followed, which the Jordanian army captures larger portions of Jerusalem. And the city is divided into Jewish and Arab sectors. No Jews would be allowed on the Temple Mount after 1948. The continual conflict over this relatively small amount of land is destined to increase and involve all nations before Jesus Christ returns. God prophesied that he would make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all peoples. All that burden themselves with it shall be wounded, and all the nations on the earth shall be gathered together against it. That's from Zechariah 12, verse 3. The Bible says Jerusalem is destined to be the center of good things to come. This time, the vortex will draw all people in it for good instead of a siege, famine, and bloodshed. Zechariah 1, verse 16 and 17 says, "Therefore says the Lord, I am returning to Jerusalem with mercy. My house shall be built on it, says the Lord of hosts, and a surveyor's line shall be stretched out over Jerusalem. Again proclaim, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, my city shall again spread out through prosperity. The Lord will again comfort Zion and again choose Jerusalem." God says that even though he brought punishment on his people, he would again return to Jerusalem with mercy, and that the surveyor's line would be stretched over Jerusalem for the purpose of rebuilding the city. And God says he will again choose Jerusalem. Today, no temple dedicated to God of Israel exists on the Temple Mount. However, there are both Jewish and Christians who are dedicated to rebuilding a temple. They believe Bible prophecy tells of a future temple when Jerusalem becomes ground zero of biblical prophecy. From the sermon titled Building the Temple, given February 8, 2014, by Aaron Dean in Cincinnati, East Ohio, Aaron Dean reflected on an event that happened one Sunday morning in 1984. This meeting would be placed in a co-worker letter sent out to the Plain Truth subscription list in January 1985. Aaron Dean said, quote, "We'd been watching the broadcast in Mr. Armstrong's home. The doorbell rang. I went to answer it. And outside there were three men in black suits, white shirts, and yarmulkes. Curls where their sideburns were, and waistcloths and tassels on it. And I figured they were Orthodox Jews. Several clues there. They wanted to talk to Mr. Armstrong. They wanted to discuss building the temple because they wanted the Messiah to come back. And if only Mr. Armstrong would help finance building a temple, the Messiah would have something to come back to. They knew we, Ambassador Foundation, a public philanthropic arm of the Worldwide Church of God, had done a lot of things in Israel, particularly in Jerusalem with Mayor Kolek and several of the prime ministers of the country." End quote. Since that time, Josephus and Titus, many Jews have longed and prayed for the reconstruction of the temple. Some devout Jews turn to Exodus 25:8 and cite God's instructions to Moses, saying, "Let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them." The controversy will intensify, and to understand how this small patch of land becomes ground zero of Bible prophecy, we go to the writings of the prophet Daniel. In Daniel 12, Daniel writes, He writes of a time when Messiah is sent to rule from Jerusalem. He also refers to a time before the coming of Messiah when the daily sacrifice is taken away. So Daniel 12, verse 7 through 13. Then I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it shall be for times, times, and half a times, when the power of the holy people have been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Although I heard, I didn't understand. Then I said, Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. Verse 10, many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. But you go your way to the end, for you shall rest and will rise with your inheritance at the end of those days. Well, part of our homework for the feast is to figure out what that means with the numbers. 1335, never been quite clear, but I got some time. I got some spare time now. According to the laws given to ancient Israel, the daily sacrifice can only be conducted by authorized Levitical priests at an authorized site for sacrifice, such as the temple. Daniel's prophecy reveals that before the second coming of Jesus Christ, there must be some sort of animal sacrifices taking place in Jerusalem. Now, the picture in the slide, if it were a better picture, you could see that the Dome of the Rock is in the background of there. They're probably doing this somewhere in the city of David, and slaughtering a bull is a messy, messy thing. The other photo, clearly that's a joke of the abomination of desolation with all the Egypt stuff and gods and idols and stuff. It's just the ridiculousness of idolatry. So when animal sacrifices are reinstituted in Jerusalem, you will know that biblical prophecy is being fulfilled. But a physical temple isn't God's main focus. Jesus Christ is returning to a spiritual temple, built of people who have responded to his call and dedicated their lives to becoming part of it. There is a Muslim denial of a Jewish temple or presence in Jerusalem, claiming that everything has been made up. But that situation changed 77 years ago with the 1948 establishment of the State of Israel and the bloody fighting in Jerusalem, in which Jewish areas of the city were overrun by Jordanian troops. As a result, Jewish synagogues were destroyed, Jewish property was confiscated, and Jewish graves were desecrated. Parts of the city became no man's land, where the unwary could be shot by snipers. This perilous situation continued until 1967, when the Six-Day War allowed Israeli troops to capture the entirety of the city and repel the Jordanians. The prize was the Temple Mount, and it came under control of the Jewish people. But now, not to further inflame Muslim anger against the tiny, fragile Jewish state some almost 50 years ago in that 1967 war, they were worried it would lead to another war. And Israeli commander Moshe Dayan left control of the Temple Mount to the Jordanian authorities. One key condition was that the believers of all religions, Muslim, Christians, and Jews, would have access to the Temple Mount. And this precarious situation has led to almost 60 years of tension and bloodshed. Considering these deep-seated hostilities, it's no wonder that God prophesied what's going to happen in the time of the end. Zechariah 12, verse 3. And it shall happen on that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut to pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. Only a few days before his death and resurrection, Jesus gave a remarkable prophecy to his disciples while on the Mount of Olives overlooking Jerusalem. In addition to foretelling the destruction of the temple and its vast complex of courtyards, colonnades, and storage buildings, he spoke of the horrifying events and developments of that end time. Luke 21, verses 20 and 22. Luke 21, 20 and 22. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let those who are in the country not enter her. For these are the days of vengeance. These things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babes in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon the people. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword and be led captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trampled by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles are fulfilled. I think I kind of covered these, that topic on trumpets. Jesus went on to describe signs in the heavens and many other terrifying events, including devastating warfare and natural disasters of various kinds that would precede his second coming. But this time there's hope. There'll be signs in the sun, the moon, and stars, and the earth will have distress and perplexity, seas roaring. Men's hearts will fall from fear and expectations of the things which are coming on the earth, for the power of the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now they will see these things happen, and look up and lift your heads, because your redemption's near. The good news, this is trumpets when redemption comes to the saints. Rescue from the world from an unexpected source will come. The book of Zechariah contains a prophecy of what happens next. It says, "Behold, the day is coming. The Lord is coming. For I will gather all nations to battle against Jerusalem. Then the Lord will go and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east." This is a view of the Mount of Olives taken from the Temple Mount. And you can imagine that big mountain, that hill, that Mount of Olives being split in two, and the water coming from God's throne. It's pretty amazing. Now, once Jesus puts down rebellion and opposition, it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all nations will come against Jerusalem, shall go from year to year and worship the King, the Lord of hosts. And they're going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Micah 4, 2 and 3 says, how Jerusalem will fulfill its destiny as a world capital and be transformed under the righteous king. Many nations shall come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between many peoples and rebuke strong nations far off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Isaiah 11, verse 9 says, "They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." From the ancient time of Abraham and Isaac and Mount Moriah through the age of David and Solomon until the time when the Babylonians destroyed the first temple, God had a plan. Although Hellenized, Romanized, and converted today into an Islamic domain, the Temple Mount will one day be home to Jesus Christ and his saints, and the world will know God's peace. I want to acknowledge, boy, that's small. I took some liberties in putting this report together, this message together. Vortex of the Past, Vortex of the Future, January 24th in Vertical Thought Magazine, 2007 by Taylor Brandon. Jerusalem's Temple Mount, Center of Conflict, Beyond Today Magazine by Scott Ashley, May 22nd, 2018. Building the Temple, a sermon by Aaron Deaton, February 8th, 2014. A Trip to Remember by Darris McNeely, November 10th, 2005. And Ground Zero Jerusalem, Beyond Today Magazine, July 9th, 2013, by Gary Petty.